This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio and happy Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day to you, Dan, out on the left coast. And we've got George Neumeier. Is that pronouncing it right?
It's
Neumeier. Neumeier. Okay, I'm sorry. George Neumeier on as a special guest, coming on Memorial Day. And, George, we appreciate you giving up an hour of your Memorial Day. But I think this is going to be a very, very interesting show. And, Dan, I'm just going to let George sort of do his own bio. He probably knows it better than anybody else, I would assume. And just give us a brief bio. George, I have kept up with George through the American Spectator over the years, but that's only a small portion of what George has contributed to. Would you say overall to politics, George? Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yeah. I've been writing about politics for 20-plus years, since college. I graduated in 1994. I went to the University of San Francisco, which is a Jesuit university. I studied philosophy and theology, and so I'm well-educated in the Catholic intellectual tradition. And so I went into politics or political journalism after I graduated, and I've been writing for the American Spectator for over 20 years, and I've been writing for various other publications. I was the op-ed editor at Investors Business Daily for a few years. I've been a media fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. I wrote a book with Phyllis Schlafly a few years back on Obama's war on religious freedom called No Higher Power. And then in May I released a book called The Political Pope, How Pope Francis is abandoning conservatives and delighting liberals. And so I'm hoping your audience will go out and buy the book. I think they'll find it enlightening because it really sheds light on the very damaging liberal direction of this pontificate.
You know, I think, and Dan, you will correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure George will too, but, you know, I don't think, maybe Catholics, maybe you do much better than we, but anyone that's on the outside looking in, as a pope is selected, I know if you get black smoke, this guy doesn't get in, white smoke, you got one, or whatever, but the selection of a replacement pope after a pope has died, and the selection by the cardinals of a new pope and so forth, outsiders for sure don't understand and don't know what when I say politics, not the church politics, but outside of the church politics, does it play any role at all in the selection of a pope? Like this one, it seems like most popes do lean liberal as opposed to real conservative, but this pope has certainly proven to be rather liberal. So how did he come about?
Well, he came about because liberalism has been gaining a foothold in the church for decades, and I would argue that it almost goes all the way back to the Enlightenment, you know, in the 18th century. Liberals, you know, from Voltaire on, wanted to put a liberal on the chair of St. Peter, and they've been, you know, trying to liberalize the church, and they've been trying to push worldly left-wing politics on the church for a long time. And in the 20th century, they started to make a real dent in the church. They got a lot of liberals into the seminaries. And, you know, in the 1960s and the 1970s, all sorts of liberals came into the church. And they were, you know, socialists and communists. And, you know, I document in the book how liberation theology in Latin America was actually created by the Soviet Union, by the KGB. The whole concept of liberation theology was coined by the KGB. And they saw that as a way to get the religious peasants of Latin America to support the Soviet Union over the United States. And that that whole culture of Latin, of liberation theology, had a big influence on this current pope. Jorge Bergoglio comes from Argentina, and he was shaped to a certain extent by that atmosphere of liberation theology, which had a very Marxist tinge to it. And as I argue, it didn't even originate in the church. It originated outside of the church with the Soviet Union, trying to smuggle into the church a theology that would push the religious peasants of Latin America to the left. And at any rate, so for over the years, liberals have been getting stronger and stronger in the church, and a number of those liberals became cardinals. And of course, the College of Cardinals elects popes. And so there were enough liberals in the college to elect Jorge Bergoglio. And Ratzinger, the last pope, Pope Benedict XVI, he resigned under pressure from a lot of these liberals who didn't like the conservative direction that he was leading the church in. And so he had been the subject of all sorts of smears and leaks and rumors, and he was so demoralized by all of that he quit the papacy. He resigned, and then that created an opening for Jorge Bergoglio to be elected. And incidentally, as I detail in the book, Jorge Bergoglio had actually come in second at the last conclave, the one that Benedict XVI was elected at. So Bergoglio came in second the last time, and then when Ratzinger, Benedict XVI, stepped down, Bergoglio could then be made pope. But it all happened because enough liberals entered the College of Cardinals that they could elect a similarly liberal pope.
Fascinating.
And do you cover that history in your book, George?
Yeah, I do. And so what the argument I'm making is that Pope Francis is the culmination of a leftist infiltration of the church that goes back at least a century and maybe even longer than that.
Well, having come from Argentina, wouldn't he see the chaos that's currently going on in Argentina and maybe rethink his liberal position?
No, you'd think so. You would think that he would see how socialism has made so many people poor in Latin America, but he doesn't see that. And he blames poverty not on socialism, but on capitalism, on the free market. And yet the free market has done more to lift people out of poverty than any other system ever devised. So it's very odd, very strange that he wouldn't see that the socialism in his own country, which has had such a devastating effect on the poor, he wouldn't see that that is a very problematic ideology. So it's almost like, he seems to be part of a liberal elite that almost has like a death wish. You know, they're pushing all these ideas which defy common sense. You know, it's almost like they're engaged in an experiment against common sense, against what we know works. And we know that the free market works, and we also know that socialism doesn't work, and that socialism impoverishes the very people it claims to help.
But isn't that true?
You use the word death wish, because I think that's exactly what is going on in our country. It seems like the progressives have kind of a death wish for the structure of America. And that's an interesting topic to discuss on Memorial Day. But Dave, you were
that's what we witnessed with Obama. You know, for 8 years, Obama was saying, "I'm going to fundamentally transform the country." Well, we know what that means. Fundamentally transforming a country means killing a country. It means basically saying we're going to, the America that the founding fathers created, we're going to destroy that, and we're going to put in its place a liberal country, that corresponds to our desires and our thoughts, and we'll just try to make that the basis for our country. But we see that all those ideas and all those desires are actually very destructive, and they amount to a kind of national suicide.
George, would you say in some ways Obama did more to shoot himself in the foot than he did to help his cause? I think in many ways we, and with the election of Trump, Americans stood up and said, we're not going to put up with this stuff. Now, we've always had
That's
we've always had, and this even goes back to Dan and my time in college, we've had the revolts of the college students that, generally speaking, have their head in a very dark place and don't know what they're talking about. We've seen some of it out on in your neck of the woods in California and so forth, but by the same token, I think Obama did enough that we really turned it back to I'm proud to be an American.
Yeah, there's no question that the success of Trump's Make America Great slogan was a direct result of the failures of Barack Obama. People were tired of being led by an anti-American wimp who was destroying the country. And so they wanted somebody like Trump who was brash and strong and nationalistic, and so they were in the mood for that. They had an appetite for that after 8 years of seeing a president basically always apologizing for America, always running America down, always trying to build up America's enemies, appeasing the world of Islam. You know, the people, our worst enemies, he would be constantly apologizing to. And try and basically helping, through his weak policies. So yeah, I mean, there's no question that Trump was created by Obama.
So how would you rate? And then we'll come back around to going to Rome. But how would you rate the Middle East and European portions of Trump's trip before he went and met with the Pope?
I think it was all pretty positive, and I think it showed American strength that he would go over to that part of the world and stand up for America's interests and values so forthrightly. And it showed that he's not unlike Obama. He's leading. He's leading from the front. You know, Obama would say, "Oh, I'm leading from the back." Well, you can't lead from the back.
You can only push from the back. You can't lead.
Yeah, so the days of America submitting to this sort of liberal international consensus, those days are over with Trump, and Trump is actually leading. And so he went to Saudi Arabia, and he gave that speech in which he said, "You guys have to take Islamic terrorism seriously, and you have to fight it aggressively." And so that was a very strong speech. And days later we see what happened in England, and so again and again Trump is being vindicated, and people can see that he's the only person on the world stage who's actually talking about the real problems and how to solve them.
George, I want to
for the introduction of your book, you're talking about Pope Francis being the most liberal pope in the history of the Catholic Church. I'm reading from your Amazon thumbnail of your book. And do you think that after Pope Francis leaves that the next pope will be conservative and might have a mantra, make the Vatican great again?
There
is certainly a need for somebody like that to emerge.
George,
and
before
that does happen, but unfortunately, the fact is that this pope has been appointing lots and lots of cardinals, and he's appointing people who are as liberal as he is.
George, if I can interrupt you a second,
he has a long pontificate, and he names most of the cardinals. Then those liberal cardinals, in all likelihood, will elect a Francis clone.
Georgia, we got to take a break. Let's get into that in more detail after we come back after this.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Dan and Dave Show, only on America's Web Radio, which is now part of America's Broadcast Network. We'll be telling you more about that in the days and weeks ahead, but we've got a lot of great things going on here at America's Web Radio and America's Broadcast Network. Today we're delighted to, I hope we're not taking you too far away from the barbecue, George, and you're going to be able to get to it and enjoy the rest of Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm happy to be with you.
George Neumeyer, and he has a book out that I've got to go get a copy of it. I think it's going to be fascinating, good reading, The Political Pope. And for news junkies like myself, you know, I heard an interesting statement the other day by a reporter. The Vatican is the smallest country in the world. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that's, I think the smallest, state,
And it, and
by geography.
Yeah, and I...
And maybe even by population. I assume that its population is under, well under 1,000.
I never, you know, I had, Dan, let me ask you, we're both Protestants. Had you ever thought of the Vatican as being a country? I knew it was a separate part, and I knew it was its own little thing, but I never considered it a country.
I don't know. I don't remember ever thinking one way or the other about it, actually, Dave.
But, you know, we've all known that the Pope, the power of the Pope. Fair statement,
the
George?
The power of the Pope, yeah. I just looked at the Pope as being over millions and millions of people, so I never thought of the Catholic Church as being small in any regard.
George, being what you are in politics and your history and so forth, does the Pope have the right to stick his nose into political business?
He does when these political issues overlap with actual church teaching. You know, for example, on the issue of abortion, nobody would object if the Pope, you know, was to try and influence politicians to be pro-life. You know, that is not seen as clericalism. But it is clericalism when he sticks his nose into issues where the church doesn't have a teaching, such as, climate change activism, for example. There is no Catholic teaching on climate change activism. That is a matter on which people can disagree, Catholics can disagree. And so it's very wrong of him to be putting the church on one side of that debate. And that is an abuse, I would argue, of his authority. He's applying his authority to an issue where the church doesn't have a teaching, and that meets the textbook definition of clericalism. And it's a very, divisive. You know, he's supposed to be a principle of unity. He's not supposed to be a divider. And the way a pope unites Catholics is by standing up for actual church teachings. But if he's going to use his office to take stances on contentious political matters on which Catholics can disagree, and he's taking the liberal side, that's bound to have a very divisive impact on Catholics. And I don't see how that could possibly be in accordance with the mission of his office.
You know,
in your introduction to your book, you say, where other popes sought to save souls, he prefers to save the planet and play politics, from habitual capitalism bashing to his support for open borders and pacifism. Interesting statement. So he is a socially engaged pope, obviously, and a political engaged pope, too.
Well, he goes around saying to everybody, I don't want to convert you, and I don't want you to become a Catholic, which is very unusual. It'd be like the owner of a Cadillac dealership saying, I don't want you to buy my Cadillac. It makes no sense. So, Ann Coulter made a funny comment. She said, if you're going to go around telling people, I don't want to convert you, and it doesn't really matter what you believe, and if you're an atheist, you can go to heaven, and if you're Muslim, you can go to heaven. She said, if that's what you think, you're probably qualified to be a host on CNN or MSNBC, but you're not qualified to lead the Catholic Church. And yet, so we basically have a pope who never talks about the next world. He's always talking about this world and the temporal politics of the moment, and he's just trying to put the church on the side of left-wing politics all the time. But he never talks about theology, and he's basically always telling people, it doesn't matter what you believe. That is a complete departure from what previous popes have said.
George, obviously you've been a writer for quite some time. Why did you decide it was time to write a book about the Pope?
Because nobody else had, written such a book. All the books on the Pope so far have been, fawning, and have been works of, what's called hagiography. They're just papolatry. It's just, showering excessive praise upon the Pope, even when he's saying and doing things that are questionable. And I thought there was a need for an honest book about the Pope, a book that would illuminate the damage that he's doing to the Church. He's basically advancing a very sweeping liberal revolution in the Church, which is having an enormously polarizing impact on Catholics, particularly Catholics in the pews. That's a story you never hear from the media. The media would like you to think that every single Catholic on the face of the earth thinks this Pope is great, and that's simply not the case. The fact is that people in the pews view this Pope with great ambivalence, and in some cases they view him with anger because they see what damage he's doing to the Church. And the Catholics who really like him are the lapsed Catholics, the Catholics who leave the Church. And the liberal media, of course, loves him because he's a great propagandist for their favorite left-wing causes. And all these liberal politicians love him because he's, backing them up on open borders and climate change and gun control and all these other issues. So I just felt there was a need for some truth-telling about what's been going on with this Pope. And, he's treated like the media as if he's the second coming of Gandhi or something, when in reality, a pretty ruthless left-wing demagogue who's doing tremendous damage to the Church.
Which brings
now,
up
with making statements like that, have you felt any blowback from the Catholic Church?
Yeah, I mean, there are people who don't want me to say this, and certainly priests and bishops, they would rather not have this discussion. So they're making, they're telling people probably not to even comment on the book. But there has been, a few people have said, oh, you shouldn't talk about a pope this way. But my response is the integrity of the Catholic faith, protecting the integrity of the Catholic faith, is more important than serving as a publicity agent for the Pope. And we can't place papolatry above the integrity of the Catholic faith. The Pope is the vicar of Christ. He's not Christ himself, which means that he has to submit to the will of Christ just like the rest of us do. And if he's saying and doing things that are contrary to the words of Jesus Christ, then the faithful have a right to stand up and correct him. In the same way that St. Paul corrected the first pope, Peter, when Peter was saying things which deviated from the words of Jesus Christ.
I gather that Father John on Fox has not invited you on to talk about your book.
No, but Kimberly Guilfoyle on Fox News, on The Five, she endorsed my book, and she said that it was a fascinating book, and she encouraged people to go out and buy it, and so I did get some attention from Fox in that way. But yeah, those priests connected to the church establishment, they would hate my book because it involves too much truth telling, and they want people to think that everything's fine in the church, and they're just engaging in a lot of happy talk about the church and saying that the church is doing great when the church is not doing great. We are not witnessing a springtime in the church. We're witnessing a winter in the church. You know, people just look at the vocation rate, the religious vocation rate. It's declined over the last 4 years of this pontificate. Fewer and fewer people are joining the priesthood and joining nunneries because they can see the damage that this pope is doing to the church.
Has a pope ever, I think I know the answer, but has a pope ever been ousted?
No, popes have resigned, but they've never, there's never been a forced abdication or something like that. No, but
impeachment.
Yeah, there is no impeachment because the cardinals are not above the pope, so they're not in a position to formally remove him. Only God can remove a pope. But
and we know how he does that.
Centuries have discussed. St. Robert Bellarmine and other theologians have discussed what would happen if a pope becomes a formal heretic. And they said that if that were ever to come to pass, where a pope, stood up and said, I reject the teachings of the church, they said that at that moment, such a pope would in effect, self-vacate the chair of St. Peter. He would self-excommunicate himself. And then at that moment, the cardinals could stand up and say, well, the chair of St. Peter is now empty by virtue of this man's self-excommunication. And so, therefore, we're going to move to elect a new pope. That's how they saw this playing out. But the question is, has the Pope Francis reached that point? Is Pope Francis a formal heretic? And that is a very difficult question to answer because you can't, in order to find out if somebody's a formal heretic, you kind of have to be able to read their mind and heart, and that's very difficult to do. So it would really take, for that to come to pass, Pope Francis would basically have to stand up and say, I reject Catholic teaching. And at that moment you could say, well, he is a formal heretic. But until then, you have to assume that he's not.
It's all
George, if you're really fast, you can tell Dave how to find your book. I already know, and I've already put in an order. But Dave
is
one step behind. So.
Yeah, you can if you just go to Amazon.com and type in The Political Pope, it should come up. And you can order it there on Amazon, or it's available wherever books are sold. So Barnes & Noble and a lot of independent booksellers, I think, are offering it. So, but Barnes & Noble and Amazon would be the two primary ways to get it.
Okay, with that being said, we've got to take another break. You're listening to the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio. We'll be back with George Neumeyer right after this.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed, and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And you're back on America's Web Radio. Happy Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day to you, George, and Dan, to you. And just a quick reminder of what Memorial Day is all about. I know that it's a special day in my heart for many reasons. My dad was in World War II and have a son in the military, so this is a special day, and our blessings go to all the families that their fathers or sons or relative or friend has sacrificed and given the ultimate sacrifice to give us the power to talk just like we're doing today. And George, this is going to go down as one of our best shows ever. I just find the subject fascinating, and even more so from the standpoint that you're standing up and you've written about a pope and the liberalism. You know, when I was growing up, we had some very, very close Catholic friends, but depending on who the priest was at the Catholic Church, some priests said, yeah, it's okay to have Protestant friends and be with them and go out with them. And then other priests would basically keep the flock in the house. It's interesting. People don't know about Catholicism. I certainly don't. And what you're saying is very, very interesting.
Well, I think that, you know, the Pope John Paul II, you know, in particular, had a very unifying effect on Christians of all stripes. You know, I think a lot of non-Catholic Christians viewed Pope John Paul II as a great champion of conservative values. And even if they didn't agree with him on every single theological issue, they appreciated that he was standing up to the communists and that he was standing for the value of human life and important value, Western values. And but what we're witnessing under this pope is that a lot of conservative non-Catholic Christians feel, you know, that they too have been alienated by the liberalism of this pope, and they feel that he's not doing a very good job of representing Judeo-Christian values. And so it's unfortunate to see that a lot of the unity that Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI had built up, is dissipating under this pope. And at a time when conservative Christians of all stripes should be uniting with Catholics, there is now a kind of barrier because this pope is so clearly on the side of the global left.
That's
a great background, George. Recently, the pope had a very important visitor, and talk to us about how that visit went and what your insight to the American presidency meeting Vatican Pope, how that came down, and what the impact of that's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, the meeting between Trump and the Pope was very polite, you know, and it appeared like it went fairly well. You know, it appeared that Trump was more happy to meet the Pope than the Pope was to meet Trump. You know, he had a very glum look on his face in some of the pictures, and if you compare the pictures of him with Obama, you know, he's laughing uproariously with Obama, but then with Trump, he's much more subdued. So, but at the same time, you know, you have to say it was basically a polite, you know, sort of harmless meet and greet. But the more interesting thing is what's going on behind the scenes, and that's something that I address in the book, which is that the people around Francis do not like Trump, and they actually were trying to prevent his election. and they were supporting Hillary Clinton. And they didn't like Trump because they're in favor of open borders, and he's not. And they're in favor of climate change activism, and he's not. They're in favor of gun control, and he's not, and so on and so forth. So they were actually in the tank for Hillary Clinton. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win. So the cardinal in Chicago, Supich, was completely in the tank for Hillary. The bishop in San Diego, Bishop McElroy, was completely in the tank for Hillary. And there are a lot of bishops in America particularly who wanted to see Trump lose. And I document in the book the anti-Trump remarks that they made. And so the significance of this meeting is probably not as great as some people are claiming, because on the surface it looks like progress was made, but in reality no progress has been made. And the reality is that the Vatican is going to be undercutting Trump for the next 4 years.
And what effect do you think that'll have on 2018 and 2020?
Well, the irony, though, is that despite the fact that a number of the bishops were opposing Trump, and despite the fact that Pope Francis was basically telling people to vote against Trump, because remember, he made the comment that anybody who's in favor of building walls is not Christian,
mm-hmm.
which was a shot across the bow of Trump. And so a lot of people, you know, were interpreting Pope Francis's remarks to be an argument for voting against Trump. And yet, what happened? Catholics ended up voting for Trump. You know, 52% of the Catholics voted for Trump. So Trump actually won the Catholic vote. And what that indicates is that this Pope, his political influence is more hollow than people realize, and that he's really representing not the people in the pews, but the liberal elite. So he's not so much the people's pontiff, he's more like the liberal elite's pontiff. And the same thing happened actually in Europe. He had told Britain not to vote for Brexit, and yet British Catholics voted for Brexit. And so we're seeing that this is a pope who's more of an elitist than a populist. And somebody like Trump, that's just not working.
And that's good, in my opinion.
That's good, yeah. So the hope is that, you know, in 2020, Catholics will vote to reelect Trump, and they'll see that he's an infinitely better option than his Democratic opponent, who will undoubtedly be pro-abortion and pro-gay marriage and all the rest of it. So there's no reason for any Catholic to vote for Democrats, because the Democratic Party is a godless party. It's the party of abortion. It's the party of gay marriage. It's the party of transgender bathrooms. It takes a whole host of stances which go completely against Catholic teaching on the moral issues.
So the power, and I hate to keep bringing this up, the power of the Pope, is it trickles down to the priest that is head of the local or neighborhood Catholic church? Does this come out in the pulpit, or does the priest decide?
The influence, I mean, they would be affected because the priests at the local level might be influenced by the pope. So if the pope, for example, if the pope is promoting climate change activism, then, you know, it might be, you know, the local priest might feel empowered to promote climate change activism at his parish. And so in that way, his influence can trickle down to the local level. And that's a bad thing, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I think the cardinals need to stand up and tell Pope Francis to knock off the left-wing politics and to talk, you know, to remind him that his mission is not to, quote-unquote, save the planet. It's to save souls, you know. He's supposed to be focused on the next world, not this one. You know, or at least not to the, you know, if he's focused on this world, it should be to lead people to the next world. And he's supposed to be saving souls, not playing politics. And if he plays politics, then the local priests feel entitled to play politics too. But what they're running into, I think, is that a lot of people in the pews are sick and tired of this, and they don't go to church to be lectured at by Rachel Maddow. You know, they don't want their priest to be MSNBC hosts. They want their priest to talk about God.
You know, so in Trump's new war room, where he's going to have his counsel at first shot from the media be able to respond and go against the media, is he also going to have someone there to respond to the Pope? George, did I lose you?
I don't know that I understand the question. I'm not sure, George.
You asked me. Asked me about his advisors.
Well, you know,
Bannon is a Catholic, and he's very close. You know, he's a close advisor to Trump, and he's certainly in a position to rebut the dubious statements made by Pope Francis. And I hope that he does that. He should do that. He should. There's no reason why he should just accept the Pope's propaganda. And I'm hoping this week, actually, they completely reject the Pope's propaganda with respect to the Paris climate deal. You know, because Pope Francis wants Trump to keep America in that Paris climate deal that Obama had put us into.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, Trump's going to decide whether or not to stay in it. And I'm hoping that Trump gets America out of it and disregards what the Pope said, because this Paris climate deal is it's ridiculous. It's bad for our economy. It's bad for freedom. It has no basis actually in science. All of that is nonsense. There's no scientific credibility behind it. This is all just pure socialist ideology being imposed on the world by a small group of liberal elitists.
Where, looking in your crystal ball, where are we going from here?
Well, I think that this battle, you know, the battle between the global left, which the Pope has now become the sort of leading figure of, and against Trump and the conservatives, that battle is going to go on for a long time, and I think it's going to be a very dramatic and difficult battle, which, you know, frankly, the liberals have an advantage in, because
okay, George, I think we just lost you.
Oh. Can you hear me now?
I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. Something happened with your phone or something. Yeah, yeah.
Can you hear me?
We can now, yeah.
Yes, I can hear you, George. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah. So at any rate, they own much of the culture, you know, and that gives them a great advantage in politics, and that makes it hard for conservatives to control politics, but I think that over time their influence will lessen, because I think people can see that the global left is on the side of irrationality, and they can see that liberalism is just one big experiment against common sense, and that's why they elected Trump, because Trump represents common sense against an elite that is pushing a very crazy ideology.
At this point, I want to take our last break. Dan, we're going to have to take our break. We'll be back with George and Dan right after this.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that chronic nasal congestion, a decreased sense of smell, and asthma can be signs of allergies? Allergies are caused when the body is exposed to things you breathe in or eat that the body does not like. The body's immune system reacts and attacks it, what it perceives to be the enemy, even if it causes no harm, like pet dander or dust. This leads to swelling. In the nose, this causes congestion. In the bowel, it causes stomach bloating and diarrhea. In the lung, it causes shortness of breath and wheezing. And in the skin, it causes hives and itching. The first line of defense against allergy is avoidance. Dustproofing, washing pets, and keeping them out of the bedroom can help with environmental causes. For food allergies, keeping a diary of things eaten and reaction to them is helpful. Allergy testing is less time-consuming and is a safe and effective way to identify allergies. For a complete evaluation, you should see your allergy specialist.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back to the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio. I am fascinated by this show, and we're going to put some more PR out on it. Folks need to listen. George, thank you so much for giving up an hour of your Memorial Day to be with Dan and I on the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio. George Neumeier,
sure, happy
and
to
and he has a book out that we highly suggest everybody going and getting a copy of, The Political Pope. And just, I love your title. That basically wraps it up. That says what it's all about, The Political Pope. George Neumeier. So, George, Dan has a question for you that I would have liked to have turned off the board and just listened to all of your answers. So, Dan, you want to ask it again?
Well, this interview is, like, I agree with you. I think this is a great interview, and I'm finding George to be a fountain of wisdom in all sorts of areas that I didn't expect. I thought the show was just going to be about a meeting between Trump and Pope Francis, and we've gotten into all sorts of things. And the can of worms maybe that I'd like to take the top off of right now is the Pope's views on Islam. George, do you have comment on that, or do you want to stay away from
it? Oh, yeah. No, it's, that has been a very shocking element of this pontificate, is that he, unlike his predecessors who were very critical of Islam, this pope has been an apologist for Islam and has been describing it as a religion of peace and saying that there is no such thing as Islamic terrorism. You know, when, I don't know if you remember the Charlie Hebdo attack in France several years back where all those journalists were killed, you know, the yes. Pope was asked about that, and instead of standing up for Western values and saying that free speech is important and things like that, he instead said that, well, if you offend somebody else's religion, then you should expect a punch in the nose. And he did not stand up for Western values. He instead served as an apologist for Islam. It's almost like at times when you hear him talking about Islam, you think, you wonder, is he a paid spokesman for the, you know, Islamic religion? It's almost like he works for CARE, you know, that group, that Muslim propaganda group. And he does not sound like a Catholic pope. You know, the fact is that Islam has been the historic adversary of the church and has warred on the church for centuries. And if anybody should recognize that Islam is a religion of jihad, it should be a Catholic pope. And yet instead, what we get from this pope is just nonstop propaganda for Islam. And it's very shocking, and you know, he as I document in the book, he commends the Quran and tells people to read the Quran is basically saying that the church has no problem with Islam, when the reality is the church has always had a problem with Islam because it's not based upon the divinity of Jesus Christ. That's the first problem with Islam, is that Islam rejects Christ as God, as the Son of God.
All the
popes until this pope recognize that.
You think Pope Francis would realize that if he was standing there with a Muslim with a knife, what that Muslim would do to him?
Well, that's, I guess we're going back to this sort of Western death wish that the liberal elite is pushing, which this pope unfortunately has swallowed, and I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. Yeah, you know, Islam, ISIS would like to blow up the Vatican, and the world of, you know, a lot of these Islamic terrorists would, you know, kill the Pope if they had the chance. So it makes no sense that he's making excuses for a religion that wants to kill him. And I know people will say that, you know, he's trying to build up moderate Islam, but the fact is that he's not really meeting with the moderate Muslims. He's meeting with the hardcore Muslims. That's what happened in Egypt. When he went to Egypt, he, you know, had a meeting with the leading imam in Egypt, who's, and it turns out that imam is in favor of killing apostates. So he's not meeting with moderates. He's actually meeting with the hardcore Muslims, and he's making it easier for them to strengthen Islam.
So would you, you know,
so that's, I mean, I know that, you know, it's possible to, you know, interpret what the Pope is doing in a more generous way, I suppose. But if you just go and look at all these different Islamic terrorist attacks from, you know, in France and England and America, the statements that come out of the Vatican after these attacks are always on the side of apologizing for Islam. They're never on the side of grappling with the problem of Islamic terrorism in a real way.
You know, if, from what you said, we look at our president. He has the cabinet. He has his consultants other than the secretaries on the cabinet. How does the structure are the people that consult the Pope blowing in his ear and blowing this liberalism into, or is this strictly his thing and he surrounded himself by Me Too people?
Yeah, I mean, since Vatican II, which was a very, you know, the spirit of Vatican II, at least, was very liberalizing, and it was pushing the idea that all religions are good and that Islam is a great religion. And so there have been liberals who think like that in the church for decades. And a lot of those people are now working at the Vatican, and Pope Francis himself is a product of that thinking. And so you basically have a situation where pretty much everybody at the Vatican is pushing the idea that Islam is a great and good and peaceful religion, and there's nobody around to say, hey, wait a second, this is not what St. Thomas Aquinas said about Islam. This is not what many of the popes said about Islam. This is not what the Catholics were saying during the Crusades when, you know, Islam was killing Christians. I mean, everybody says the Crusades was the fault of Christians, when in reality, the Crusades represented a response to centuries of Islamic aggression. You know, basically, Islam moved into the Holy Land and took it over and killed all these Jews and Christians. And the Crusades was a response to that. And it wasn't until very recently that Catholics viewed Islam as a benign religion. They always viewed it as a, you know, as St. Thomas Aquinas said, it's a false and dangerous religion. It's a religion that was designed, you know, as he put it, for crude desert wanderers. And it's really never changed since then. You know, it's the same way today as it was when it began with Muhammad killing a bunch of people. I mean, Muhammad was a warrior who killed countless people. So it started in blood. And it's still in blood.
Do you? I personally, this is only my opinion, but do you really look at Islam as a religion or an ideology? There is so much.
Well, if you use the word religion to mean any kind of system of worshiping God, including systems that are manifestly false, then I guess you could call it a religion. But I take your point. Yeah, I mean, it's because it doesn't really involve the real worship of God, in my view, it's more like an ideology than a religion. I think, you know, Ann Coulter once argued that liberalism is a religion, you know, in the sense that it's an account of all reality, and they expect everybody to obey it, and so in that way they're very religious. But obviously, you know, if by religion you mean the true worship of God, then no, Islam is not a religion. It's more like a, you know, crazy ideology.
Dan. Have we lost Dan?
Dave, do you think we can get George back on? I think we've got a ton more that we can talk to him about.
I'm going to talk to him about
it
after
this. You're going to have to twist his arm.
Well, we're going to promote his book, that's for sure. The Political Pope. Again, back to you writing this, did you just feel moved that this was something you had to do?
Yeah, well, I'm a Catholic, and I'm actually writing this out of loyalty to the church. I want the church to be strong, and I want the faith of the church to be preserved. And I see this Pope weakening that faith. And so I'm hoping that a book like this will encourage people to defend the faith and will encourage the cardinals to use their influence to bring the Pope back to what I see as Catholic orthodoxy, which I think that's really what's important here. And so I felt like a book like this, you know, the saying, sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a book like this, you know, can serve that purpose. It will illuminate the problems in the church in the hopes that those problems will then be solved, you know, and those people in a position to solve the problems will then have information and ideas with which to solve the problem. So I'm hoping that this book will give the cardinals the courage to stand up to a bad pope.
You know, this is just my philosophy of, in many ways, we were very anti-Obama, to say the least. And I was concerned about how much he could do, but the reality of it is the pendulum swings. And as I mentioned earlier, I think Obama with his, if he had been extremely moderate, not that he wasn't sneaky enough, but he would have done much better, in my opinion, than he did. And like I said earlier, I think he's the one that really got Trump elected. Now, hopefully this will be the same case with the Pope.
Yeah, that is a good point. And that, yeah, just as Barack Obama failed, the hope is that, you know, Pope Francis, who's the Barack Obama of the Catholic Church, basically, that he too will fail. And that, you know, there's that saying that you can't, you better not turn the heat up on the frogs too quickly, lest they jump out. So you have to
that's right.
Boil frogs. You have to turn up the temperature gradually. So yeah, when these guys turn up the temperature very strong, then people can see what's going on and can jump away. So it's almost to our benefit when they take off their masks and we can see their revolutionary faces.
With that being said,
people can resist them.
With that being said, George Neumeyer, we have to thank you for coming on today. We want to invite you back. I will be giving you a holler very shortly. You've been listening to the Dan and Dave Show on America's Web Radio. Stay tuned for the NSPS Hour with Kurt Sumner right after a couple of messages.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.